Rave Radio. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another fun-filled, exciting technology world of AV Insider. I'm your host, as always. My name's Johnny Moda, unless it's changed. Today, it hasn't because I like where I live in California. I don't need to leave here. As always, I have a special guest. His name is Joe Perfido. He's the president of Tributaries Cable and Claris Cables. The parent company to that would be Gordon J. Gow Technology Incorporated. And he has those two really cool companies underneath him. But before I bring him on the show, as always, I'd like to thank my sponsor, Ingram Micro. They are the world's largest technology distributor, delivering flexible multi-channel supply chain solutions and more. If you go to www.ingrammicro.com, you can check out all these solutions that they'd have to offer for you. And if you're not currently using some of the stuff, maybe just kind of check out and see what might be a good fit for you guys as integrators. As I mentioned, Joe, thank you for taking the time today. I know you were on the East Coast, and it is storming over there, as I heard a minute ago.
It sure is. It's pouring, but it's Florida. It's in August in the afternoon, so that's what keeps the grass green and the flowers growing.
Well, I'm glad that you made it to the show. Hopefully it warms up there for you guys, as I have some friends that live there as well, and they get a good mix of a lot of sunny days and then some of that stormy weather you talked about. Joe is the president of the company, which is actually, let's talk about this a little bit, because it sounds like it's two sub companies underneath the parent company, Gordon J. Gow Technologies Incorporated, which house Tributaries Cable, and Claris Cables. Can you tell me a little bit of a story on how that came to be?
Sure. I started working for Macintosh Laboratory and Gordon Gow in 1975 as a Southeast Regional Sales Manager, and then wound up in the early 80s being the National Sales Manager for the company. And then in 1989, Gordon passed away suddenly, and in the meantime, during those years, he married my sister, becoming my brother-in-law. Well, after he died, the company was purchased by Clarion from Japan, and I elected not to continue working for them after 1990. So I left Macintosh at the end of 90, and my sister and I started Tributaries in April of 1991. And we named the company after Gordon J. Gow Technologies, and our first trademark was Tribute, for Tribute products, as making the company a tribute to Gordon. And when we decided to manufacture and sell interconnect cables, I wasn't pleased with the name Tribute Cables. I just didn't like the ring of it. And one of our Macintosh deals and a friend, Ken Zellin from House of Music, as a matter of fact, in San Francisco, suggested I use the name Tributaries. And we did. We used Tributaries. So that's how we started Tributaries Cable. And that was April of 91. And then in early 2011, I decided that we needed to have a high-end brand, something separate from Tributaries, because Tributaries at that time was really best known as home theater type of cables, and we were not we didn't have any visibility in the audiophile or true high end. So at that time, I had a relationship with a gentleman by the name of Jay Victor. He was working with our company as a consultant, helping us in the development of our power conditioning products. And I mentioned him the fact that he'd wanted to get into a design of some high end cables, and he said, "Well." He told me that he had a number of patents that he held in high-end cable design. When I looked at the patents and the nature of the patents, I have a degree in electrical engineering, so I was able to get an idea of what he was doing. And I was really surprised because there wasn't a lot of smoke and mirrors. There was some very interesting technology that he had developed having to do with the shapes and sizes and types of wire that he used. Types of copper that he used to produce a cable that had a much smoother, balanced, open sound to it. So that's when we came to an agreement, and we are licensing his patents and using his technology in our Claris brand of cables that we introduced at the Rocky Mountain Audio Fest in October of 2011. And we've been developing that cable and developing retail dealers to sell our products throughout the United States and in overseas. So that's the basic story, Johnny.
It's a good story, and actually what I'd like to do is talk a little bit towards the end to focus a bit more on the high-end Claire's cable line.
Sure.
Let's start with Tributaries Cables, because you guys don't just manufacture and produce cables. As you mentioned, you have, I believe, some power conditioning and a couple other converters as well.
Yeah, our main focus is interconnect cables and power conditioning. We have some other things we sell, some HDMI electronics balance for extending HDMI over longer distances, and a couple of audio products that that are used to convert optical to digital coax or digital coax to optical or decode Dolby down to left-right audio, a couple of things like that. But our basic focus is in the interconnect cable and in on the power products.
Okay, let's start with the power products sections. What type of power products are we talking about? I mean, conditioning or?
There's really three different types of power products that we design and manufacture and sell. And one are power conditioners. These are models that would fit in a rack mount, a 17-inch front panel with ears that mount in a rack, that have surge suppression filtering under and over voltage. One has 9 outlets, one has, the other model has 13 outlets, meters on the front, that type of product.
Mm-hmm.
Then we also have a line of power strips, starting with an individual single outlet, $20 retail type of product that's made to be used with cappuccino machines, garage door openers, timers for irrigation systems, anything that has a clock or a readout, an LED readout on it. It's got a readout, that means it has a chip. If it has a chip, that means any kind of surge on the line or like a storm like we're having today could cause that to fail. We had one of our employees in our company had a problem with their refrigerator. They had bought a refrigerator a couple of years ago. It was out of warranty, but it had an LED panel on it, and they had a surge. And they called the repairman to come fix it. And the repairman said, oh, yeah, you took a surge. And the board has to be replaced. It'll be $300.
Oof.
He said, wow, that's a big price to pay. They had just a single outlet surge suppressor on that outlet, on the refrigerator outlet. They could have probably saved the refrigerator and a $300 repair.
Right.
So that's one model. Then we also have another model that fits behind a TV that has 3 outlets on it that's surge suppressed. And then we have some power strips. One is an 8-outlet power strip, and one is a 10. And these, the difference with these is they have rotating outlets on it. So you can rotate the outlets to accommodate wall warts and larger type of plugs so they don't interfere with one another. All have surge suppression, all have filtering, power switches, circuit breakers, really very well-made products.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about if the power strips you guys make, if they had any accommodation for wall warts and such, because that's a big common thing when we talk about electronics or anything, especially in anyone's, let's just say, media room. You have a few devices, you know, your cable box, it could be a sat box, Blu-ray player, etc., other devices, we're talking about gaming, like the Xbox or PlayStation or something like that, they all have some sort of power pack / wall wart, and most of the time they're based at the end where you have your prongs and to plug in for power. And that takes up more than just a single space on a simple power strip. It usually bleeds into the second section, preventing you to put a second plug right there. So the use of having a rotational plug or something like that on a strip makes it a bit more accommodatable to have a secondary source or something to plug in for power. And that's I like to see that people are starting to do that more and more, because that obviously is a problem.
Yeah, and these power strips are extremely popular for that particular reason. They're not big and bulky. The what we call the T8, our eight outlet power strip, has 5 rotating outlets and 3 fixed outlets. But it's in a package that's only about, I don't know, 3 inches wide, 4 inches wide.
Mm-hmm.
and maybe 12 inches long. So it's in a really compact package. So it fits very nicely in bookshelves or under desks. So it's not in the way all the time.
And all these have surge suppression on them, on the strips?
Surge and filtering,
and
yes.
And filtering.
Yeah, well, they all have surge and filtering. And then we also have a third line of power products that are used mostly by custom installation companies. And these are in-wall type products. For instance, if you had, let's suppose you had your television at one end of the room and the equipment, the electronics, were at the other end of the room. Well, it really is nice if you can get the TV back to the electronics so it can go through the surge suppression that's in, let's say, if you had a rack or a shelving unit, which is a larger surge suppressor. Of course, it has more capability. But the difficulty is running the AC line back, you know, through the room. So we have a product that has an outlet that goes behind the TV, just a standard outlet. Then it has to be connected via Romex in-wall AC wiring to another outlet that's placed behind the equipment rack. And in that, we put a Neutrik PowerCon connector. And that's an AC turn and lock rotating connector that once it goes in, it turns, it's locked. You can't take it out until you pull back on a lever and then turn it to remove it. That then plugs into the power conditioner, bringing power conditioning over to a remote TV. There's that product. We have one that has a filtering built into it. And then we have a third one, which is a self-contained dual outlet that has surge suppression, filtering, and under and over voltage all built into a very small box that is behind the double gang outlets. And that has to be put in by an electrician. That requires a licensed electrician. But that can be put in behind a TV. A lot of people use them for projectors because the projectors are usually on the ceiling or in a different part of the room. Mm-hmm. So it's really simple just to cut out a place for a dual gang box and just slide this in and have the electrician connect it up to the main supply. And then you have surge suppression, filtering, and under and over voltage all protecting the projector.
When you talk about filtering, are you talking about like noise filtering and such, or
yes, line noise?
Okay,
basically line noise. You know, because there's a lot of stuff that goes on in everybody's house, and your air conditioner turns on, the refrigerator, any kind of motor that turns on. Whenever it turns on, it always puts some noise on the line. The other thing that happens, and most people don't realize this, all your electronic equipment that you have in your home, all the PlayStations, processors, preamplifiers, receivers, TVs, everything that it's electronic today, computers, everything are chip-based. And if they're chip-based, that means they oscillate at very high frequencies in the megahertz frequencies. And because of that, in most cases, that high-frequency energy can leak back through the power supply and out the power cord and actually corrupt the AC line. And it happens all the time. And the difficulty is most of the power cords that are being used today are not shielded. And if they're not shielded, that means there's going to be radiation of that high-frequency signal. It's going to be radiated into the room. And guess what lays right next to all the power cables? Well, it's all the audio cables.
Right.
Of course, that noise gets induced into the audio cables, and it brings in some high-frequency noise. Now, is it something that you would hear or see as a shh or rattling noise? No. What it does is it changes the noise floor. It raises the noise floor so that softer sounds are hidden in the noise. Also, on a TV, it can also cause the resolution to be not quite as clear as it could be, because if there's noise on the screen, you may not know or realize you're looking at a screen that has noise in it, but it may not be as crystal clear as it could be. And a lot of this has to do with noise. And one of the things that a good surge suppressor will do is remove a lot of this high-frequency noise so it's not interfering or corrupting the audio signal and video signal in your system.
Thank you for that very well-descripted noise floor description, really. Because a lot of people, when we talk about let's just say for a lot of my friends and stuff, because like something like that wouldn't, you know, like you said, you wouldn't probably wouldn't notice it at first, but when filtering it out, you're going to get at least the best possible picture and audio, sound and imaging that you could get had it not been filtered, or now that it is filtered, to try and reduce as much of that out as possible, because a lot of these things, like you're talking about motors and such and electronics in people's homes, produces that. And then it, like you said, it, for whatever reason, like we're talking, let's just say we're talking about a table, and then we have, like, you know, like the boxes, the cables and all that stuff, it's just routed in that, you know, we have audio cables, you have power cables, something you should never have side by side. But more often than not, that's where they end up, especially on the little media table in front of the TV, where, you know, it's just everyone, it's just the most common thing to have in people's homes that aren't, you know, running wires in the ceiling or wherever. It's just, you know, from a table right up to the TV, and, you know, have power, audio, and they often are just looks like a rat's nest of wires. And this is what happens. And a lot of times it's just plug it in and that's what you get.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. You know, years ago, when before we had high-definition television, remember, we used to watch everything on composite video.
Right.
And it, we thought it was great. I mean, I always thought, you know, it's nice TV. It's good. That's good picture. Mm-hmm. Sony, one of the Sony Trinitrons came out. Remember, there was nice TV, real sharp. And anything that was happening in there, noise, if there was any extra noise, you wouldn't even notice it just because the resolution wasn't good enough. But today, with these high-resolution screens and now 4K, 2K, noise is going to be very apparent on these screens. Or I should say, when the noise is removed, it becomes very apparent what these TVs are really capable of when they're used in systems that have really high-quality filtering on the AC lines.
Okay, and so now that we've kind of defined the noise and what that means for your components and such, I think I already asked and you said yes, but so all of the strips and all of the power conditioners you sell have the noise filtering and some sort of suppression on them?
They do. Okay. They do, but they're not all the same.
Right. They're yeah.
With the surge suppression, the same thing. That small single outlet has what we call 540 joules of suppression. And then when you get into the larger units, you go to 4,000 and 5,000 joules of suppression. Same thing with the filtering. As we go in from the smaller models to larger models, we can put bigger filters in it, mm-hmm. literally, just physically larger. And they'll do better filtering as we go into the better models.
Right. But at least some sort of filtering and suppression is better than absolutely none, as we talked about with your refrigerator that burnt out because they didn't have anything there to filter or suppress a spike or a surge.
Yeah, exactly.
And would you say that by doing that, that's at least somehow how your strips are better than some others? Because I've seen some, you know, they don't really have anything like that. It's just, you know, okay, it's a power strip and that's what it is. There really isn't much. There really isn't, no filtering or suppression at all. It's just, you know, you plug stuff in and that's what you get.
Yeah, and also the level of what type of filtering that's being used. Some just use a capacitor and call it filtering because, yes, a capacitor will filter high frequencies. But we use chokes, which are large inductors, in addition to the capacitors, which are called LC filters, that are much more effective and have a much, much narrower range of operation so you can control the frequency range that's being filtered and also the amount of filtering that's occurred. The other difference is in the surge suppression. Most surge suppression is accomplished via what we call MOVs, metal oxide varistors, and these are they look about the size of a nickel when they have two leads coming out of them, and it's a device that's put across the AC line and or from one leg of the AC line to ground, and when the voltage starts to increase above somewhere around 200 volts, the MOV becomes a short circuit, and it starts to conduct that extra voltage to ground and get rid of it. So there's a range of these kinds of devices. Some of them, if they take one over voltage, they'll fail, and they'll and they usually will fail open, meaning that the user has no idea, no knowledge that the MOV or surge suppression is no longer operational because the unit continues to work. Really a bad idea. We've seen people lose their systems because they had a power strip that failed open and didn't know it, and they then had another surge and they lost their equipment. Also, it's the type of MOVs that are important. Our MOVs that we use are a patented design, and they're encased in a ceramic case. In other words, they're held in place so that when they start to conduct high voltages, they will get hot. And if they get too hot and the heat isn't dissipated, they can explode or they can catch fire. So what we did is we put these into ceramic cases, and the ceramic case, number one, prevents any kind of an explosion, but it also dissipates the heat quickly to the surrounding area and allows the MOV to continue working without failing. And if it does fail, it opens, it fails, but the outlets that it's protecting are automatically disconnect.
Which is a good... I think that's great. I don't know how other people do it, but ceramic, like you mentioned, for some of you motorhead out there, or motor geeks, it's like having ceramic headers, basically, reducing the amount of heat that that they're getting, or at least dissipating them, versus being solid metal.
Exactly.
Let's talk about, I mean, we mentioned all three types of power products you have now, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Let's get into the let's get into the cable portion. I mean, you have a full line, and it's a lot of interconnects mainly, right?
Yeah. In tributaries cables, we have a full range of interconnects from audio, video, HDMI, other digital like USB and coax digital. We have speaker wires, many different numbers of different kinds of speaker wires, bi-wire, standard wires, all the connectors that go with it. In cables and power cables is the other major.
Do you also have a structured cable as well?
No.
Is that the other company or no?
You mean structured cable, meaning
like bundled cable where you have two Cat 5 and a coax or an RG?
No. We were in that business up to about September of last year, about a year ago.
Okay.
We got out of that. That's become a real commoditized business.
Okay.
So that was not something that we were doing well in from a profitability standpoint. It was the margins were way too low. So we decided that was not the kind of business that we needed to be in. So we divested.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the audio interconnects and stuff. Sure. Is there basically one line in terms of what there is versus this is I hate to use the term good, better, best, but it's kind of a good description of what you can buy from tributaries, or are they all pretty much the same, using the same type of copper, same, connectors on the end, whether they're gold-plated or and braided on the cable itself, or what are we looking at?
Well, the cable line is basically an introductory level and then a good, better, best, if you want to look at it that way. There are four levels. We tried to make it easy by naming them with a series. So we call them Series 2, Series 4, Series 6, Series 8, where Series 2 is the introductory level, and then Series 4, 6, and 8 are the levels as they go up.
Okay.
Now, one of the interesting things that may catch your attention is that we make all our cables, all our interconnect cable sets are made here in Orlando. We do all our own soldering. So the way we've set this up is we design the wire, the cable itself, we design the connectors, and then we have these made for us in overseas. And we bring all that in, we bring the cable in, we bring the connectors in, and then we do all our own soldering. We do all our own assemblies here in Orlando, except for HDMI, optical, and eight and USB. Those are molded end connectors, and now our power cables. Those are all molded ends, so we do not make those here. But all the other audio cables, video cables, digital cables, by digital I mean coax digital, we make them here. We do 100% of our own fabrication. So our Series 2 is a basic line, and as we go up into 4, 6, and 8, then we go in, our designs in the audio cable become a little bit more complex as we go up. We are working with twisted pair audio cables, and as we move up in the line, we go to a better brand, better type of copper, pure copper, and then we also go into multiple gauge and multiple levels of that gauge in the audio cable. So it's made up of twisted pair, but the twisted pair is multiple gauges. It's not a single gauge product.
Now, when you say when you go up in the line to in having better copper as a pure copper, now by using pure copper, does that just reduce the like resistance across the cable, or?
No, the resistance pretty much stays about the same. What it does is it improves the distortion, or lowers the distortion levels. In other words, if the cable, what happens when you get into better cables as you move up, and this is kind of a thing probably we should talk about, and that is, what is this about cables? Different cables sound different on different systems.
Sure.
Or better cables sound better. There's no real measurements that anyone has come up with that can say, okay, here's a cable, and when I connect it up to my system and I compare it to a less expensive cable that I own, it sounds better. And then I did some measurements and I found that this measurement showed the difference, the reason for the difference. Well, that doesn't exist. All this is done basically by personal listening. One of the major things that we've just come across, Johnny, and I think your listeners would be very interested in this. We just started selling power cables. This is AC power cables. And, of course, the discussion is, how can a power cable make any difference? I mean, it's a short piece of wire, 3 foot, 6 foot, whatever it is, plugs into the wall. Well, guess what? It's in the wall. Romex. Two pieces of copper or three pieces of copper that runs through the wall back to the circuit breaker box. The circuit breaker box then connects to the main line out to the outside of the house and runs down to some transformer.
Right.
So how could this 6 foot piece of wire make any difference at all? And of course, that's the major argument. And we just tell people, here, try this power cord. Now, again, we have to make the assumption we're talking to someone that has a reasonably good system. I'm not talking about, you know, a $50,000 system or anything like that. I'm just saying somebody has some nice electronics, good speakers. And we do say, just disconnect your power cable. Hopefully they have a unit, like a power amplifier, that you can pull the cable off, power cable, and just connect it. I'm not going to say anything. I just want you to try it. And I can tell you, every time the response comes back, wow, I can't believe it could make that much difference. I was just 2 weeks ago, I was in New Jersey visiting some prospective dealers in that area, and went into a store who sold very nice, they were Macintosh dealers, as a matter of fact. They sold B&W speakers, so they had some really nice brands. And we listened to the system the way it was set up. I won't say whose cables it was. I don't think that's necessary. But they're a very well-recognized brand, and we were listening to the system, and it sounded really good. There was a woman vocalist singing and with some of the instruments on the side. She sounded okay. And I said, look, let's just change the power cable. I don't want to change anything else. So we changed the power cable on the preamp and the power amp, the two carrier, and we used our Claris products with that. And we plugged them in. The owner of the store was controlling the music, and he started the music up again. We didn't change any volume levels. We just changed the power cables. He pushed play, and within 5 seconds, he jumped up out of the couch and said, "I can't believe that power cable can make that much difference." I mean, it was that good, but it made the difference. If I could, maybe you see if this comes through, but the female vocalist sounded like she was singing very mutely through the thing. And as soon as we changed the power cable, it sounded like that. And it was, I was surprised. It was such a big difference. And I've heard the differences, but I had never heard that much of a difference. But what we're seeing and the way we are promoting our products and talking with our dealers and customers about it is, you know, try it. If you're skeptical about it, just try it. Take it home. Put it on your system. You tell me whether you're hearing a good difference or not. And of course, what we get back is, wow, what a difference that made. I mean, I've got a letter from an email from a professor of music at, I think it was the University of East Montana or University of Montana. I forgot which one, but he was a professor, full professor of music. And he had tried our Claris cables from a dealer in Montana. And he was just astounded by what a difference the change in the cables made. So, and that's what we're seeing. But in a lot of cases, it takes the customer wanting to, or taking the time to put the cables in and listen to what they will do. Because, you know, we can say anything we want in a store, on the air, or in an article about how these things work. But to me, the proof's in the pudding, man. Plug it in, hook it up. You hear a difference and you like it, and it's within your budget, fine. If it isn't, then, you know, you look, okay, what else could be in that family of products that could give me a better sound for less money? You know, always looking at the value aspects.
Right. Everyone's looking at the bottom line. What's it going to cost me?
Exactly.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Before we continue, because I have a few more questions about that power cable and some of the Claris stuff, is I want to thank Anger Micro again. They're the world's largest technology distributor delivering flexible multi-channel supply chain solutions and more. Head over to ingramicro.com. You can check out all the stuff they have to offer. Some of you guys might be already using their products. If not, check them out. Like I mentioned, ingramicro.com. You said that you brought over the Claris power cable. Does that mean that Tributaries has a power cable as well in that line?
Yes, it does. Yeah, we have one power cable in the Tributaries line. It's in the Series 6 group.
Okay.
And it's relatively inexpensive when you compare these. I mean, there are power cables that go up to $20,000 for a power cable, you know. This power cable, for a 6-foot power cable, retail price is $100. Excuse me, $125. 3 foot's $100, 6 foot's $125, and a 9 foot is $150. So, you know, it's in that vein. But then we get into the Claris products, and those are a little bit more expensive. They start at, there are two levels in Claris products. There's the Aqua level and the Crimson level. Crimson is the highest level. And within each of the two, Aqua and Crimson, there are two power cords. One's a high current, strictly designed for power amplifiers. And the second one is what we would call a standard power cord that can be used on anything else. I mean, they can actually be used on either one, but they perform better on that, on these, each type of product. And the least expensive Aqua is a $300 retail for a 6-foot power cord. And the most expensive Crimson high current one is $1,500 for a 6-foot power cord. So you can see what the range of prices for power cables are.
Without really giving away, I guess, the technology that's built into the cables and what you're using, can you give like a good description of like, is it just, are we talking about like, you know, a thicker gauge of wire or copper that's in these cables, or, you know, maybe the connection that's being made, also a solid, tighter connection?
I'd be happy to talk about the technology. In fact, on the website, ClarisCable.com, there is one section for reviews. And within the reviews, we publish all the reviews, by the way, that we get from online sources, from print media, from customers, from dealers that use the product. There's also a white paper that talks about the technology that Jay Victor, who's the patent holder, wrote for us, that we publish on the website. So this is public knowledge. There's no secrecy here. The basic patent states that you can affect the sound of the music going through a cable by varying the size of the conductors, the shape of the conductors, and the type of copper that's in the conductors, along with the insulation of the conductors. So what we have is a cable that uses for the audio cables now, audio and speaker, three different types of conductors for the entire cable. So we have a heavier gauge wires that we use for bass frequencies. We have a flat wire that we use for mid-range, and then a thin tubular wire that we use for high frequencies. And let me give you an idea of how this was developed, because this was the fascinating part for me. This is what got my attention. Because before this, my idea of high-end cable was all smoke and mirrors. When Jay told me this, I said, "Huh, that's very interesting." I said, "How did you come up with that idea? You know, the different shapes of wire. I can understand gauges, but shapes?" And he said, "Well, he has part ownership in a wire factory in China, so he has that as availability. He has the ability to get wire in different sizes and quantities that you or I would never be able to get. If I go to a wire manufacturer and I say, hey, Mr. Manufacturer, I want you to make me a cable, and I want it to have this many gauges and this kind of insulation and this kind of twisting and all these other things," they say, "No problem, Joe, we could do that. 5,000 meters minimum order, and you pay all the setup costs." So you've got to lay out $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 in order to get a sample. I'm not talking about a finished thing now. I'm talking about a sample. So Jay goes to, he said he was kind of fascinated by the idea of, and wondered what flat wire would sound like, just flat wire. So he had them make him up some flat wire. And he connected that wire between his power amplifier and speakers. And he said what he got was a really fantastic mid-range. It was forward, it was big, and it was strong. But not a lot of highs and not a lot of lows. So he said, you know, kept on experimenting. He went and got some heavier gauge round conductors, connected those up between the power amplifier and the loudspeakers. And he said, guess what? I got a great bass response, but not a lot of mids, not a lot of highs. Okay. Then he said, okay, well, what am I going to do about highs? The best thing with highs is a thin wire, and it has to do with skin effect. The more depth there is to the wire, the more bass response, because bass requires skin depth, because the high frequencies tend to ride on the surface. So if you have a wire that is only surface, that has no real depth, that's really thin wire, thin, almost like a ribbon, a very thin ribbon, you're going to have something that has more of a predominance of conducting high frequencies than mids or lows. But you can't connect something that thin between a power amp and a speakers, because you just can't physically can't do it. So he had to come up with a way of making this work. And he said what he found out is that if he wound that really thin ribbon around a non-conductive core, that he could make a tube out of it. And a tube is really good, because a tube, if it's thin enough, is all surface. And by doing that, he then has the high frequency surface area that he needs. He said he connected that up. He had them make that up for him. Connected that up, and he got what he thought he was going to get, and that is a good high frequency response, not a lot of mids, not a lot of lows. So now the key is, okay, now I have these three ideas: heavier gauge, flat, and thin tube. How do I mix these together to get the balance that I need so that I have a smooth response? Well, that took him about 5 or 6 years, because he had to try all kinds of different combinations of gauges, sizes, and flat to come up with the right balance so that he would have a cable that had a really smooth response. And it has much more than just a smooth response: open sound stage, depth, great bass. I mean, tons, really excellent, excellent product. But because he had this ownership in the wire company, he was able to get them to make this for him 6, 7, 8 different times all these different variations until he came up with the combination of these lows, mids, and highs that he was happy with. So that's how the whole cable thing evolved. And that thinking runs through the entire line of product, right to the power cables. Those power cables are designed so they conduct, they tend to conduct more toward the 50-60 cycle area. And so they don't have that real thin, what's called tinsel wire in it for conducting high. So it concentrates on the lows. But it also, the power cable has really, it protects against three different types of noise conduction. That is, noise that's coming down the power line, that's one. Noise that's coming in from the outside, which is called ingress. And then noise that's getting out of the power cable, going to the environment around it, and that's called egress. And he does that through specific windings of how the stranding internally and the bundles are wound, so they tend to noise cancel. And then we use a very heavy silver-plated copper shielding and an aluminum mylar shielding inside the power cord to keep signals from getting out or signals from getting in. And by the way, the copper that we use in all of this is called, in all the Claris products, is called PCOCC copper. That's pure copper from the Ono continuous casting process. And if you Google PCOCC, you'll get a whole big education on this particular type of copper that was designed, manufacturer of it was designed by Professor Ono, in Japan. And there's only one company in the world that makes this particular type of copper. But the beauty of the copper is it's single crystal copper. All of the copper has a crystalline structure in it, and the idea is that the crystalline structure causes extra distortion and noise as the signal carries through the copper and has to go across the crystalline boundaries. But because Ono's copper is single crystal, it doesn't have any boundaries, so it is the purest copper that's being made in the world today, and it has the lowest level of distortion.
I just learned took a whole class on copper today. That's great because, you know, you mentioned a good term that we always hear, you know, smoke and mirrors, right? You know, why, yeah. You know, copper is copper all day long. You know, why is this better? The same with, like, you know, your power cable. Why is this 3-foot, 6-foot connection any better than the rest of the Romex that it leads out to the transformer outside that it leads out to the rest of the world? Why is that one piece better? You know, why is this copper better than yours? Why is this cable, you know, does it really produce that much better sound? Why does it cost, you know, like $150,000, whatever it costs? Why is it so much better? So what we just learned was there's plenty of reasons. We're talking about shapes and size and stranding and certain types and certain shapes, you know, where that audio rides on the copper itself, whether it's, you know, all flat surface versus round with depth. There are plenty of reasons for it. I just learned all of them. It's like,
well, good. I'm glad. You know, I think from our company's standpoint, most of what we do and have been doing for the past 20 some odd years is education, because so many people, including the people that sell these products, don't know enough about it. They really don't know the inner workings and how these things came about. You know, historical perspective is so important in any time you're dealing with working educational purpose, where you're selling things to somebody or just giving people information. And when you have a good, strong background in those things that you're selling and understanding, people respond in a positive way because everybody wants to learn. We all want to learn something new. People that are going to listen to your program are listening to it not because they know everything that people are going to be talking about, because they want to learn something new. And when they do, then it goes to your credit because you brought that to them, and they continue listening, of course, and hopefully supporting your advertisers. But then they'll go out on the market and buy those things that they learned about. And guess what? Not only do they learn about it, but when they buy the product, bring it home, connect it up, and listen to it or use it, you have a knowledge of that product and how it works and what makes it work so well. It makes the ownership of it even a more valued thing to them. So it becomes that much more important.
Well, I take no credit in your teachings. I am only the student, and I am glad to share that with other friends, because, like I said, I had we not had spoken today, I probably still wouldn't know, you know, this information. I'm glad that your company shares that information, you know, just as public knowledge, because it's good to share. You know, like I always talk about with other guests and stuff. You know, like why try? I mean, I can understand certain things. You don't want people to kind of blatantly rip you off, but at the same time, you are promoting your product and you stand by it for these reasons. And here's the technology and the science behind it. And this is the reasoning behind this cable. And like you said, it wasn't just like something that happened overnight. It was years and years of practice and setups and creating on to a much better product, and why this one specifically worked for a mid-range, but doesn't necessarily give you lows or highs, and why this one is more specifically ranged, like the tube one, for a good high end, but not necessarily mids or low end.
Yes.
So it's good. I'm glad that you did share that, and I'm glad that your company does provide that as just public knowledge. I mean, it's good to educate. And one of the things with audio in general, not necessarily the cabling or the speakers, I like to talk to people. Like I work in the store, where it's like an 8,000 square foot facility. It's fully automated. And so a lot of times I get to teach others, and I have friends that come by and they're like, oh yeah, you do automation. And I kind of really don't know what that is until I kind of give them the remote and push a button. But like, you know, 20 actions happen. They're like, oh, automation. And you got to experience it. But with the audio portion, when trying to sell or promote quality audio versus, you know, subpar or something not as good, and explaining to somebody, the most common response I get is, you know, I can't tell the difference. And I think when I was much, much younger, I could tell, oh yeah, this is, you know, a better sounding speaker, relatively speaking. But, you know, as time goes on and I've had a chance to listen to all these really good high-end speakers and lower quality, and like we talk about good, better, best and things like that, everyone has the same ears, you know, until like you just blast them till you can't hear anymore. But everyone has ears, right? So until you've trained your ears to hear those subtleties and, you know, the difference between a, you know, good low-end range and mid-range and higher quality of audio, I don't think that you really can hear those subtleties and or even more of a subtlety, you know, in those frequencies, because you aren't really listening for them, being uneducated. And sharing the education really does give you the knowledge base that required to hear those subtleties, whether we're talking about in a cable, in a power, you know, audio cable, power cable, or a better quality speaker than brand X speaker.
I have a feeling about that one, which I'll share with you too. The idea that somebody has to be trained to hear the differences, yes, that may be true. But if you have a system at home, an audio, let's say you're a two-channel person that you like to listen to, whether it's CDs or vinyl or streaming, and I'm not talking about MP3s now, I'm talking about something a little bit higher level than that, that you're used to listening to, and something you've listened to over a period of time that you've become, you know, you have intimate knowledge of the sound of that system. So you know when you put a CD on, you know what it's going to sound like, basically, because you've listened to it a bunch of times. And you make a change to that system, you change the wiring, you change the power cord, whatever, you're going to hear a difference. Mm-hmm. Now, whether the difference is good or not, that's a judgment call on the listener, but you're going to hear a difference. I liken it to your automobile. I assume, you know, you live in California, you drive, you have a car. Mm-hmm. If that front end is out of alignment just a little bit, you probably won't get 3 or 4 blocks with that vehicle when you notice something's not right with the front end. It's got a little shimmy to it. It's got a little vibration to it. Something's happened. It's pulling one way, pulling the other. It's not going to take much before you notice it, because it's something you do on such a regular basis that you're going to notice the difference right away. And I think that's what happens when somebody takes a system that they have and makes a change to it. They're going to notice a change. They're going to notice what happened. again, whether it's good or not, or not to say good, but it's going to be different. Whether they like it or don't like it is going to be a judgment call on their part. But if it's any kind of reasonable system besides a boombox, I think you can hear the difference. If you put better wires in, you're going to hear the difference in the sound of that system. What happens, people say, oh, gee, I never heard that cymbal before.
Yeah.
Or I never heard that bass note before. Or, boy, that voice, I didn't realize there was another person singing in the background. And we hear it all the time because people who take the time to make the change and do this. And I can tell you there are numbers of dealers around the country. Most of the, and I'm not talking about Best Buys or any of these guys. I'm talking about the small stores, the independent salons. You've got a couple of them in your neighborhood, I'm sure.
I do.
Up in your part of California. They're, you know, so many different places that if you go in and you say, hey, I'm really interested in making a change to my system and I want to start with the cables because that's usually the easiest thing and the least expensive things to make a change in the system to see what kind of a difference there are. Most of these types of stores will loan you cables to try to see how you like them or how they work or at least get interested in that type of thing. So it's always a good thing to go to your local dealer. I know for tributaries in the Bay Area, we have a number of dealers in the Bay Area that sell our products, and they all would be the types of dealers that would be happy to loan cables to a consumer to try with their system. And we have a couple of Claris dealers also in the Bay Area, and as we do in lots of the other major cities in the U.S.
So you think it's more of like a learn by repetition?
Learn by repetition.
Quote unquote training to hear the subtleties and the, like, I never heard that cymbal or never heard that bass note before, but like, because, you know, with the car example, you know, I drive that car every day and then one day the alignment's out of, it's just out, you know, you're going to be able to tell as before, like maybe, had I never driven that car before, I wouldn't know because that's just the norm.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's more of because it's a repetitious thing? It's because I do it so often, I'm able to notice that subtlety or that symbol by making that small change, whether that's a cable or a new piece of a new preamp or whatever it is, or went to tube or something like that, that I am able to, whether good or bad, like you said, am able to hear the difference.
Yes, that's exactly the case. The repetition is what builds up that mental memory for you.
Okay.
That's why when people say, well, they're going to go into a store and they're going to A/B cables in a store,
mm-hmm.
on a system they've never heard before. And my response is, don't waste your time. That's not a good way of doing it. What you have to do is you have to do it on a system that you already know,
mm-hmm.
something that you've listened to a lot and you have a good experience with it. Then it starts to make sense. But just to go in and make comparisons, almost impossible, because the brain, and this is where experience comes in. I'll work with you on this part of it. And that is, once you've done this for a number of years and you've been doing this, then your mental audio memory becomes longer. What happens is, okay, you go in and you have a system set up. And then you say, okay, I'm not going to change the cables. It's going to take you some time to change the cables. It's not instantaneous. You got to pull. You got to get behind the equipment. You got to pull the old ones out, take them out, and you got to put the new ones in. So you got at least a couple of minutes. With speaker cables, it could be up to 5 or 10 minutes,
sure.
if they're bi-wire cables because of all the different connections. Well, your mental memory is not that good, you know, unless it's some dramatic change. And then if it's a dramatic change, you know, like, oh my God, I can't believe it, what a difference. Then I'd almost say, well, the first cable you were listening to may have been defective if it's that big. But the experience of years and years and years, you can do your mental memory better. But unless you have that capability, then the comparison needs to be done in a system that you know well to start with, and then you change something that you already know well and make a change to that system and see what the differences are.
I like that analogy. I think that's very fair to say, because, like you said, if, you know, oh, I'm just going to go down to a big box store where they have a room full of, you know, these brands of speakers, and then you're just kind of listening from room, you know, from tower to tower, and say it's just a two-channel setup, they're all unique in their own way. But like you said, unless you're really comfortable with each one individually, it's hard to make a distinction. And then trying to change the cable on that, it's like, how are you going to remember all those things unless that's something that you just do day in and day out?
Yeah, exactly. I agree.
Let's go back to Claire's cable really quick. You said you have, is it three levels of cable or it's two? The
Two. We have the Aqua series and the Crimson series.
Okay, what's the main difference between the two?
The main is the amount of copper.
Okay.
The size of the cable is just dramatically different. Crimson is quite a bit more copper. Mm-hmm. And there are some windings that are a bit different and some configurations that are different. But they wound up being, the Crimson winds up being about double the price of the Aqua.
So is it a thicker gauge overall, thicker gauge.
Okay. Right. Yeah, for instance, the high current power cord in Crimson is an 8-gauge cable.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a big cable. Hmm. And the Aqua of the same one is 12-gauge.
And are they all stranded?
Well, they have these multiple strands, yeah.
Okay.
They have solid core, but everything is insulated. That's another thing I didn't mention when we were talking, is that all the conductors are insulated individually. So there's no bunches, there's no stranding of cables. I mean, it's not like a bunch of strands twisted together. Each conductor is individually insulated. Uh-huh. So for instance, when you open up the speaker wire, I think there's about 100 different conductors in there, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
All individually insulated. So when we make them here, we have to hand strip each one.
Wow. I don't feel lucky for that person who has that job.
Yeah, there are special people who do that.
I'm sure.
I mean, they are special.
Terminating Cat 5 alone for me isn't my favorite thing in the world.
Yeah, right.
Now, let me ask you about the braided on the outside shielding of the cable. Is that purely aesthetics, or what is that for?
Oh, you talk about the jacketing material?
Correct, yes.
Oh, yeah, that's strictly cosmetic.
Okay. Yeah, I always kind of wonder about that. Is it just a cosmetics, or is that just, what is that for? But that's...
Yeah, it's cosmetics, because the jacket underneath it is a polyvinyl core PVC, and it's usually black.
Right.
And it doesn't have a lot of character to it, so putting a woven jacket on top gives it a much nicer kind of look, especially if it's something that's going to lay on the floor and that's in the open. It's nice to have something that has nice look to it, you know, some kind of cosmetic, pleasing cosmetic design.
Okay, and lastly, on the connection on the spade connector or whatever the cable happens to have, are they gold plated or are they solid gold tips? Or
how? No, they're all gold plated. They're brass, copper and brass, and they're gold plated.
And then gold plated for better.
Yeah, and they're all different. Okay. All the connectors that we use for each of the different cables are different. Each one is a different connector. When we did the Claris line, we had to design not only the cable, we had to design all the connectors. That's the RCA connectors, the XLR connectors, the spade lugs, banana plugs, and power connectors. All of them had to be designed specifically for the cable that they were going to be put on. So they're all different.
Let's just end the last thing with here, because we've kind of reached almost every product line that you guys make, but back on the tributary side, you have a couple, we talked about balance and such, correct?
About HDMI?
Yeah, I mean, you have some other like little audio electronics as well, you have like audio balance and coax to toss link and bidirectional audio converters and things like that.
Yeah,
DAX.
The basic concept is that if you have a receiver and you need to have another, let's say the receiver only has one toss link output and you need to have a second one.
Okay.
You can take a coax output, feed it into this little box, and then you'd have a toss link output from that. So it would give you your toss link. So it's a little converter to convert composite to from coax to toss link or toss link to coax. Then there's another model called an AC200 that's a DAC. That takes a coax or a toss link input and it converts it to left-right audio. That is not Dolby though. It's not a Dolby decoder. Just it can convert coax and toss link to coax, toss link, and left-right. Then we have a third model, it's called an AC300, that has a toss link input and a left-right output. So you can go in toss link and come out left-right audio, and it'll Dolby decode.
Wow, much more products. Initially, I thought Tributaries was and Claris was nothing but cables. But you guys have quite a bit of product, actually.
Yeah, we do. We try to focus. We focus on these specific areas. We're not into various and sundry other bits and pieces. And we also our company only makes products for the audio enthusiast market. We're not into commercial work or other forms of business. Our company only does two channel types of audio cables, power products for both Tributaries and Claris.
Okay. Now, if any of you out there are interested in becoming a dealer, or want to learn more about either Tributaries and or Claris Cable, what would be the best way that you could suggest for them to do that?
Well, first I'd say, look at the websites. There are two separate websites. One is tributariescable.com, and the other one is clariscable.com. If you have an idea of wanting to know more about the company as a dealer, you can give us a call at... we're at 800-521-1596. You can call us here. The numbers are on the website also, as and all the email links are there. You can do it that way. That either one of those are fine.
So you guys heard that it is website is tributariescables.com, or the Claris site, I believe, is Claris, C-L-A-R-U-S, clariscable.com. You can check out either one of those sites.
And both of them have dealer locators on them, by the way. So if you'd like to find a dealer in your local area, it'll give you the by state. You can look it up by state, and you can see who's in your own particular area.
If you guys are social like I am, you can follow Tributaries on the Twitters at Tributaries, T-R-I-B-U-T-A-R-I-E-S, Tributaries. And or follow Claris Cable. It's at C-L-A-R-U-S Cable, Claris Cable. They also have Facebook pages. It's facebook.com/tributariescable, facebook.com/pages/Claris-cable. I believe Tributaries has the G Plus page. You can find them there. They also have a YouTube channel. And if you want to follow my buddy Joe here, I think he is just Joe Perfido?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Or is it actually abbreviated or anything like that?
No, it's the full name.
It's the full name. Very convenient. If you guys have Twitter names, unlike myself, the full name is probably the best way to do it. I always tell people it makes it really easy to find you, or at least put that in the description. Joe, thank you for your time. We lost you a little bit there a few times during the storm, so hopefully you make it home safe. Thank you for being in the office today in Florida, which is probably not as sunny as it is here in California, but also looking at the window, it's not as sunny as I'd like it to be. But I'd love to have you back on the show again in the future, and I do appreciate your time. This has been very, very informational, or educational, and full of information. Everything I've ever wanted to know about the smoke and mirrors that you guys actually don't have, but demystifying, if I should say, with proven facts, science, and technology. And I thank you for your time and your knowledge. I'm not taking credit for your knowledge there. I'm only merely sharing it with my listeners. Everyone, okay. This has been AV Insider. I'm your host. You can follow me on the Twitter, if it still exists tomorrow, at JModa3. I'm on Facebook, Google Plus, everything else you could probably think of. Just Google me. I'll probably show up. This has been AV Insider. We'll catch you next time. Thanks again, and everyone have a good evening.